Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and we're on the interwebs. I'm excited about this evening. We're on somewhat of a hot streak with a graphic novelist, and I have the author, the creator of City of Demons here with me, Parker Newman, dude. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Man, I'm glad you reached out. This is something new, but it's also something that I am getting into, and that is graphic novels, and I'm very thankful to have people like you to come on the show, man.
Yeah, definitely. I got connected, got recommended to your show by a guy you interviewed before, Dennis Robinson.
Yeah.
Written Lycan. And so I met him at a convention about a year ago before I even started writing any comics or anything, and reconnected with him on Instagram and just started DMing him and texting him through that. And he's like, yeah, make sure you go on this one. I actually really enjoyed going on this podcast. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Shout out Dennis, dude. Thanks for the plug.
Yeah.
Well, Parker, just a little bit about you, man. Where'd you grow up?
So I originally grew up in Hendersonville, North Carolina, the Blue Ridge Mountains, right outside Asheville. And if you know that area at all, it's very much just kind of like hippie country USA. Okay. So growing up there was definitely a very cool experience. Definitely really love it, really valued it. And so, yeah, I grew up there. And now I currently live doing video marketing work, just bro, and I'm really enjoying it.
Right on, brother.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Tell me a little bit about like, early life, man. You mentioned it was a hippie town. What'd you do? What did y'all get into as young people?
As young people? Well, I should say Hendersonville is less, I mean, it's more so now, but it's less so hippie growing up than like Asheville. The Asheville influence has kind of just drifted over it, okay, in recent memory. But, yeah, growing up, it was honestly, if you liked anything outdoors, hiking, anything like camping wise, like that's the perfect place in the Blue Ridge Mountains to do it. For us, honestly, growing up, it was, I guess, I mean, I look back as it's just kind of simple, but honestly, our high school was right downtown. And so right after high school, we just hang out downtown, go get coffee, just really chill stuff like that. A big thing for us growing up was also, I mean, going out to the movies, which sounds kind of old fashioned now that you have a whole group of friends just going out.
Oh, you went to the movies, did you?
Oh, my. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh. Like I remember in college trying to get like a whole group. It was like, oh dude, movies are like $14, $15 now. Like back then it was such an experience. Like, and we always, you know, we're talking about young teenage boys. So we go to like not original, like Marvel movies or something, but
yeah,
but growing up was a lot of fun. It was, I don't think I realized how unique it was until, you know, after you leave that. And you look back, it's like, that was a really interesting way. And of course you talk to other people and they're like sort of childhood. It's like, that was a really interesting environment to grow up in. You're exposed to a whole lot. And yeah, but it's like, I was lucky too, especially growing up, you're even in socioeconomics, you're not naive at all. I don't think there's any way for my area where I grew up there to be naive at all. Like, lucky the high school even I went to and elementary school, from elementary school on to high school, like, it was a good mix of everyone. So mm-hmm. you never had a certain, like, super narrow mind, like, perspective of life growing up.
Yeah.
And that I think was really, really valuable, especially when it comes to the arts. Asheville, especially, and Hearsville to a lesser extent, has a huge art community, and being exposed to very unique ways of approaching art. And again, it's just, it was such a really, really cool environment to grow up in as a kid that you kind of look back, it's like, that was kind of weird, but it was cool. And it was, yeah, but it's awesome. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, dude, like going to the movies, I can totally relate to that. Is when we would get our licenses, we actually have a drive-in nearby. But we would typically go to Columbus to your regular theater, like mm-hmm. your Malco or whatever else. But there was nothing better than driving that extra 15 minutes and taking your date out to the drive through. But they would have like the retro night. So at this drive-in, you had uphill and downhill, and so downhill was always something. You know, it might be, it depends on what night you went. You could be walking into like Toy Story 1, or you could be like walking into Dazed and Confused. You really didn't know.
That's awesome.
Then on the top of the hill, you would have like whatever the biggest movie was.
Right.
And man, it was, you ever been to a drive thru, dude? That's an experience.
I honestly have never. So I envy you on that. So I've never been through a drive thru. Yeah, it's like when you mentioned it, apparently Harrisonville had like, again, it was well gone before I was even born, but for a long, long, long time, apparently had like one of the longest standing drive-through theaters in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And it's just gone. So, but yeah.
I remember like during the whole COVID era, that was one thing that was really coming to mind was, I wonder if these drive-throughs are going to make it. They got real creative.
Oh, yeah.
And like I'm a music guy. I love going to shows, playing shows, whatever else. And so like one of the ways that they would get creative is they might not be doing a film, but on a Thursday night you could go catch just like this punk show, and like they'll be playing like the silent horror film behind them as they're playing. And I was like, these guys get it. That's creative. That's good. So
we have to do that stuff now to get people out to the theater. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, especially like with the, you know, during the whole time, it's like everything was straight to streamer. It depended on what app you had, Disney, whatever else. And now, like, just getting people back to the movie, and you said earlier, it's like
seems like such a long, yeah.
From the time
seems like such a caveman idea. it's so crazy.
Like, go to the movie. What are you talking about? Like, we watch these movies from the couch, dude. But well, cool, dude. You mentioned the arts, and so. Coming up in high school, man, would you consider yourself like just in the arts? Like, were you in the sports? What were you doing?
So high school for me, and I think it was growing up, and I'm happy that I found, especially in college and after college, you find a lot of people that are, similar, have a similar experience where it's like high school is kind of this awkward. You're still trying to find yourself. Like the people that were like, high school was the best time of my life, I don't know what they're talking about. Like it was high school.
Same,
was,
brother.
Yeah.
It's like you're just stuck with like the people in your area, you know?
Yeah. And so it's like, again, looking back on it, I appreciate it, but like, dude, college was so much better. And even life after college for me has been like just better than high school. But like in high school for me specifically, like I was really into sports. I played football, wasn't particularly good. I was a lot better at track and cross country. And I was always, competitive about that stuff. But the biggest thing I was most passionate about was writing. And I just, like my senior project was like writing a novel, trying to get self-published and all that whole process. And so going, and I would typically do that on the weekends because my weekdays would just be schoolwork and obviously practice, like did like three sports a year, and then just writing on the weekends. And
what was you writing about back in those days?
So the one like sort of novel I wrote as a high schooler, I kind of look back at now, like it's very much like 16, 17 year old.
Yeah.
The core ideas are there. Like, I still think you see the promise, but it's the actual technical aspect of it is lacking in a few areas. So, but yeah, the story itself was a futuristic crime novel that was, again, so different than anything I would write now. Mm-hmm. Like, even in college, my major was media production, so like films and whatnot. And I would write something for like a short film in college. Like, as my sophomore year, I would even thought this. I'm like, I wrote something. And I'm like, I never would have written that back in high school. And the story I written in high school, I never would have made now. And because I think that part of me creatively just had to be released at that certain time. Like, even with City of Demons, like the comic we're about to talk about, like I wrote, it is a story that had to have come out of me at this point in my life. Like 10 years later, I don't think I make City of Demons or I make anything like super similar to it. And same way, like, you know, 5 years or even 2 years ago, I would not have made City of Demons. But yeah, for high school, I was really into, you know, writing. I've always been naturally good, self-taught at drawing, or really good. I'm good enough. And so I remember, because of that, I had really good eye for visuals. And so I thought about it and I did some basic photography. And so leapfrogged that into film. And now I do video marketing, do different commercials and promo materials. And yeah, but it's something that I, again, never would have thought in a million years that, like, oh, I just like writing and, oh, I happen to have a good visual eye, which I think for a lot of people is something you just have. It's led me in a very unique path, definitely.
Yeah, man. Winding up the pitch here for City of Demons, one thing, you sent the first two issues over here to me, and number one, eye catching mm-hmm. artwork, even the style of the lettering, and great job on the story. From the first two issues that I read, I've developed the characters nicely. Like, sometimes it's a bit of a drag. You didn't waste a whole lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
You like issue one, throwing you right into the story. It's kind of traumatic. And yeah, dude. So getting into graphic novels, last question before we get to City of Demons, is like, were you a manga guy or like a DC, a Marvel comic guy, or like how did you get to, okay, yeah, graphic novel, that's the way,
right? Yeah. So for me, it was like before filming or anything or even writing, just storytelling in general, I've always been drawn to, and specifically with graphic novels and comics, I just was really drawn to it. And I think just the medium itself, there's an emotional immediacy you don't get from like just a novel. There are certain things you can do specifically with comics that you can't do with most other mediums. And so, I mean, from a young age, I was really drawn to it. I was drawn, and I remember, like, you know, you pick up like a comic book somewhere and you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, it's a little fun, little Batman or Spider-Man adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that changed it for me was, I was probably way too young to fully understand it, but I had an allowance and I bought at like a Barnes and Noble Batman: The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller.
Oh yeah.
And I bought it just because it looked like a cool Batman adventure. I was like 12, too young to really understand everything it was trying to say. But even then at 12, you realize, like, this is really different. This is really cool. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I've never felt this way reading a graphic novel. I didn't know comics could do this and like be this way. And from that, leapfrogged to, I mean, such a cliche, but leapfrogged to like Watchmen and then Alan Moore's work, which is just, he's an interesting guy, but he's a genius writer.
And, oh, absolutely.
And so, but looking at his work, like I finished reading his amazing comic book, From Hell, which again is taking the comic book form and just completely flipping it on its head in a lot of ways. And just, again, doing that, but also looking at, I'm a huge fan of Robert Kirkman's work. And City of Demons, most of its inspiration, despite being like a crime noir 1920s story, I think its primary influence in terms of the page layout, in terms of the actual lettering on the page and all that stuff, even the pacing of certain aspects of the story, that's directly Robert Kirkman, Walking Dead. Yeah, and so it's kind of a combination of sort of my experience doing filmmaking on top of his very cinematic approach to panel layout that I was like, this is how I want to tell it in. Yeah.
Well, dude, like just with pace and like what you're talking about right there is that was one thing that I picked up on quick, is a very quick read. And like one thing that I'll say about graphic novel and even the dialogue or the story or the setting, one thing that's real beautiful about graphic novels, may people not agree to this or they may not like it, is it takes all the guesswork out. Like if I'm reading,
exactly,
let's say a Lord of the Rings before the film, is so like you don't have to use all these words and pleasantries to describe the Shire or like the Hobbits or all these characters. It's like you already know what they look like, you know what the setting is, and even like if you're a good enough illustrator with the shots and the scenes, you don't have to waste a whole lot of time with dialogue
either. Right. Well, and that's the thing by artist I want to shout out. His name is, I actually found him initially on Fiverr, where you just find different freelance people. Eze Kingsley. He's a guy who's now graduated from University of Nigeria. And I found him, and it was like too good to be true, because I found him on Fiverr, connected, and then talked on social media afterwards. And looking at his work and the portfolio he showed me, it was stylistically, I thought, a perfect match, because a lot of his artwork had been more superhero driven. But I did a thing where I reached out and paid, I think, five different artists to do, to illustrate one page. And same exact page, same exact panel layout as written. I just want to see how they took it without me giving much direction at all. And from the five, he was like by far the best. It was like crazy. Like, cause he was doing things, I was like, I didn't even put this in there, but you insert this little detail I thought was amazing. And no, but he's phenomenal. I'm really amazed at his work.
The artwork was very captivating. I mean, just catching like the LA noir of it's rainy. You got the illustration of the cars, these two guys bickering about, I don't want to get into this. Well, it's our job.
Right.
And, man, I mean, he really did a good job with, setting the pace and like showing the narrative.
Oh my, yeah. His storytelling, that's the thing about a lot of people. Like, I don't think a lot of people understand just from the outset, but it's like from a writing, when you're writing a comic or a graphic novel, it really is just like my job essentially is just to direct it. Like you're essentially the director of the story. And so, but for him, it's like, okay, he'll be like, he'll draw something and, you know, through the process, I'll correct something and be like you mentioned the cars. I think it's funny because it'll be something like he'll draw, he drew a car one time. I was like, oh no, that's the wrong time period. Cause he was like a decade off. And I knew, like, I did all sorts of research, like 1920s cars and the certain framing of it. And I was like, okay, no, like it's this and that. And so, cause that's the tricky part, is like, you always have to remember 1920s with the art. Like there was one time I overlooked something. It's like, oh no. And we had to go last minute, change it. But the storytelling he adds to it, and that's what a lot of people don't get. It's like, I'm so picky about the panel layout and how that feeds in a story, just one page. Like I try to have it to where one page finishes a story, at least a solid beat. So when you're left into the second page, that finishes another solid beat just within a single scene alone. But the storytelling within comics, like you point out, is like you have to approach it in such a unique way versus like writing a novel or something, or even like a screenplay.
Well, I mean, yeah, and you mentioned like just the illustration of the car or the setting or what things would look like. What about with you when you were creating the dialogue? Like,
yeah,
was that a lot of research on your end to figure out like what's a 1920s LA cop? What's the dialogue like?
So yes, there was. At the same time, there was in terms of like I wanted to have them like speak enough of that time period and enough modern so you wouldn't be beholden to something like,
I look here, boy.
that's the thing. It's like, if you try, and that was a little, I guess a little fear I had when writing was like, okay, if we go fully that route, it's going to be perceived in a specific, it's going to be kind of seen as like you're trying too hard. And like it's a little silly, maybe a little bit corny. And I thought it was more important that these people at the end of the day, each character just feels relatable. They feel like I don't even care about character being likable. I care about them being interesting. As long as they're interesting, we'll be fine. I'm not horribly concerned if the dialogue is super specific. Cause like, I mean, they're not going to have like certain like phrases, like modern phrases. And in that time period, I mean, people didn't curse as much, so you're not going to see a whole lot of cursing during that in the dialogue. So
one thing really captured me, and I wanted to ask this, is one thing like practically 100 years ago now, I would say that the country was definitely more Christian. And also on top of that is I think one thing with today's culture that we've done, for better or worse, is we tend to medicate or self-medicate, something people 100 years ago in this very country would have said, well, that's actually a demon.
Right.
And so, well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry to let you finish your question, my bad.
But yeah, it's so like City of Demons and like just the idea in and of itself is like, give the viewers or listeners why this story? Why call it City of Demons? What is it?
Right. So quick little synopsis for anyone just new. But so City of Demons is a story of two private detectives hired by, and this is a reveal of the first issue, but it's for the rest, so who cares? Two private detectives hired by a newly arrived mob boss to essentially find the killer of this mob boss's father. The killer then, as I'm sure you'll read in future issues, begins killing other top mafia officials. And so it's a big trek to discover the identity of a serial killer in 1920s LA. And through that, you uncover a lot more of the corruption between 1920s Hollywood system and a lot of the movie theaters and sort of like the underground criminal activities from the rival mafia family. And you get, in my opinion, I think the hope is you get a very interesting look at that specific time period of LA and how the Hollywood system fed into the, I mean, to really to LA now. Like, I think the story, and it, you don't get a whole lot of a taste of it in the first two issues, but by the end, I hope you'll see the story, I feel like, has more to say about current modern Hollywood than probably did in the 1920s. And a lot of the issues we see with 1920s LA and specifically Hollywood is, and that whole culture that's becoming more and more prevalent in the news, is something that's, you know, I mean, we see that in the news now, but that's been there since the 20s. I mean, we're talking about silent era movies. And I don't want to give too much away, but as the story progresses, it's very much, I've always said, but it's very much about modern Hollywood. Yeah. And a lot of that sort of the treatment of, I'll just leave it there. I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah.
What's your fascination with Hollywood? Is that like just your background with like what you studied in college and just like, you know, growing up and going to the movies and like digging into the culture? Would you say that's where this came from?
I think so. Obviously, being a film nerd, I think that was an immediate grab to it.
Because it does, like, brother, it does kind of have like a Watchmen vibe. I hate to interrupt you, but like it,
you're good,
and which is nice because I'm a Watchmen fan. But
thank you. Yeah, no. The story for me was essentially So about why LA, why Hollywood. Being a film nerd, you look, and even just in college, you learn so much about Hollywood through that time period. Mm-hmm. And the 20s, and especially transition to the 30s, I think really was Hollywood stepping its ground and saying, like, burrowing itself in, establishing itself as like the new pop culture center for America. And I mean, that's true, even probably less so, but it's true. Still to today. And so I think what's interesting about is that Hollywood, even during that time period, has a lot of, I mean, we talk about the casting couch, like, you know, Harvey Weinstein, and we've seen that, like, coming out with, like, I think P. Diddy now, like, all this stuff.
Yeah. By the way, Cat Williams said there's going to be more.
Well, there should be, honestly. Like, there's no way it's just him, us, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that specific culture, and not say all of them do it, but that specific culture has time and time again, I mean, reared its ugly head. And I think it's something to where, I'm not saying the movie industry is like just terrible, like this terrible thing, but there's a specific culture with Hollywood when you have certain, you know, bad people in power that are going to lead to some nasty outcomes for a lot of, you know, vulnerable people. And I hope as you read the comic more and more, in the future issues, it definitely addresses that. But the terrifying thing is that's been a part of Hollywood forever, like forever. And so that culture has only, I mean, what Harvey Weinstein was like, what probably, when did he get called out finally? Like, but like way too late in the game. Like,
well, like, I mean, like, yeah. Even now with like recent developments, it seems like it's almost like the Epstein Island thing, to where it's being brought back up to where it almost seems like he's going to get away scot-free. But also, like, I mean, check this out with Hollywood culture and everything that you're tapping into is take comedy. I'm a comedy fan. Mm-hmm. Joey Diaz has shared the story on Joe Rogan. Yep. He's shared the story more than once. But if there's an upcoming female comic, if she wants to get to the comedy store at that time in L.A., that was the place to perform. Right. But you had to go through Joey Diaz. So what would he make those female comics do? Sexual act. And so, like, brother, like, you're hitting the nail on the head. And, like, what's crazy is, like, it doesn't have to be that way at all. But, like, dude, like, with power, there comes corruption. And, right. I mean, even now, and I'm thankful for, you know, podcasts, and I'm thankful for, like, independent, like, you know, like, I like what Angel Studios is doing with their films. Studios,
yeah. They've come out of almost nowhere to just like kind of make us some makers. It's been pretty wild.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And even like some of the up and coming podcasts, I mean, but like even in the podcast world now, it's like there are gatekeepers. Yeah. Like Spotify or, you know, the podcatchers such as like your iTunes or Apple podcasts. It's like, but check out What's Cooking or like the top 50 is like,
yeah,
dude, there is no way, because like if you pull that up and listen to it for 10, 15 minutes, it's dog shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I don't give a I don't care about these people or their stories. And like you take something like this, which is a lot more indie, it's like, oh, they're actually talking about something genuine.
Right.
Well, but, and like, but it doesn't get promoted. And it takes people like Dennis, is like word of mouth is like, oh, this is actually something you should
check
look
out.
At.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing about it is like, if you mentioned, if not even that long ago, you even mentioned that, oh, conspiracy theorist, oh, he's just, all this stuff. It's like, slowly but surely, all this stuff is like turned out to be true. It's just, oh my gosh. It is just, because like, again, I still say to people, like, the fact that, and you mentioned it before, and again, that whole decrepit culture that, you know, Hollywood has been a part of forever, like Epstein Island, the fact that that's real is like mind-blowing. The fact that P. Diddy's thing is real is just like, Holy cow. That's the world we live in. That's a specific culture that fosters that kind of behavior. But like you said, there are gatekeepers in a million different media avenues. I mean, yeah, it was interesting because for I mean, it definitely is harder for indie voices to get heard and get picked up. And that's, to be honest, why I'm happy that Blood Moon Comics, who's publishing it. And again, the first issue gets released in March 22nd of 2025. But Blood Moon Comics took a chance on me, and I went through the whole process of trying to get the project greenlit. And I
How did that
with
process begin, dude? How did they
yes
find you?
right so I actually watched a YouTube video. So I was really, after going to the Comic Con, and me and Dennis and a few other comic creators, I just, I had the idea of City of Demons. I'd written I actually first wrote it as a screenplay, like for a show. And I wrote it, and I was like, I'm sitting on this idea. I think with some tweaking, it could be made into a comic, like a pretty cool comic with, I think people, if they gave it a chance, would really dig. So I hired Isaiah Kingsley to, I just say his full name because I think it's cool, but I hired him to illustrate 10 pages. And then I hired Nikki Powers, a letterist, who lettered the 10 pages. And then you get all your sample material down. And then I watched a YouTube video by a guy, another comic creator who I've connected with, named Max Hoven. He's an indie guy, and he was talking about all different, like, small press, sort of independent comic publishers to look out for. And the most intriguing one was, he mentioned, was Blood Moon Comics, who I've heard of, and they've made some really awesome horror comics. Like, their bread and butter has been horror, like, can you kind of base it off the name, but has been horror comics. And so I reached out to them on their website, and they had a whole submission guideline package to follow. Followed that, I sent that to them, sent that to, I think, 10 other independent publishers. And that whole process was long. Like, it was brutal. I mean, for Blood Moon, it took, I'm not saying Blood Moon was terrible to deal with, but they were, I mean, it was a months long process to have everything reviewed, to kind of pitching it again, and just giving a million submission samples. Like, you had to write out a marketing proposal. You had to write out a submission proposal. You had to write a whole treatment of the whole story. And, like, I think it was like 10 pages long, but it was like a very quick, what the story, like, each major beat of the story. And over and the again blood City of Demons is going to be 12 issues. So Ryan, like, each issue out, like, what's essentially what's going to happen. And I don't think I followed it too well. Already in issue two, I just, little things changed. But anyway, but that was just with them, on top of what, like, nine other publishers to deal with. And so that, again, it's just months and months and months. And I really, because it was my first time making a comic, I was like, I don't know if they're ever going to, like, buy this, because I heard that from one publisher. I'll say it, I'll screw it. Top shelf, Top Shelf Comics. They, I submitted it to them, and then a few days, or maybe a few weeks later, I got an email back saying, "Hey, like, thank you, but no thank you," essentially. And so I emailed the guy. I just was like, I was kind of like, oh, dang it. So I emailed him, like, well, what specifically, was wrong with it? Because I want to know. I'm like, well, what'd you not like? And the guy replied saying, oh, no, like, nothing was wrong with it. He's like, I actually really enjoyed it. And I'm thinking to myself as I read this, I'm like, wait, so why? And he's like, but it's your first time doing this. So it's, so no, thank
Oh,
you.
okay. Oh, okay. The whole rigmarole with that is like, it's
It's like,
almost like
okay.
applying for a job. It's like, well, I went to school to study this particular thing, which is a requirement for the job, and now I'm at the interview. You're interested in what I'm doing, but you say I need 2 years' experience. Where do you expect me to get it?
Well, that's exactly how it felt. It was like, wait, so and Top Shelf, I guess. I mean, I guess you can rationalize as they're one of the bigger independent publishers, so I guess they can choose. They can afford to be choosy, but or not choosy, but more picky. But it was like, oh, because I thought our 10 page, which were just the first 10 pages of issue one, I was like, oh, I think they're pretty solid. And
They
but at
are.
that and I was like, I think, like, again, if just given the chance, they would love this. And Blood Moon, and if
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Two other publishers that were I had to choose between, but I chose Blood Moon, and they've been great to work with, super helpful.
So with them like focusing on horror, do you feel like they were taking a chance on what you were doing?
Selfishly, I'll say no because I think the story is really solid. But I mean, I guess in a way, I mean, yeah, I do think so because the story itself, I think lends. Now, I don't know this for sure, but I think one of the reasons they chose to take a chance on was because I think it feeds into their some of their pre-existing market of that horror fans. Because I do think it's not a terribly hard sell to be like, hey, you like this horror book? Like about, I think they released one by a guy, but it was like, you know, essentially like an undead army, like in World War I. I don't think it's a terribly hard sell. Like, hey, you like that? There's this other sort of like darker noir, you know, crime thing. I think tonally it's kind of a easy sell, like an easy switch in terms of who you're selling to. But yeah, I think it was a big change for them. I think, and like, I know for a fact I had to sell them big time on the story because months and months of emails back and forth. So because of that, I know for a fact that they like the story, and the guy who's ahead of it, Keith Rimmel, has been very complimentary of all the new pages he's been gaining from us. He's been very complimentary, and he's just been like, yeah, I think this looks really solid. And yeah, I think again, I'm repeating myself, but again, when people give it a shot, March 22nd next year, when people give it a shot,
and with
I
that,
think
brother,
they'll really like
like
it.
when we come rolling up to March, I know we're doing this interview now. Just to give people a little bit of a tease, but and I'll ask this question again at the end. Are like with these issues that you have released, is there a place to where they can go ahead and get a little taste, like a website or can is that available?
So we do not have a website. What we do have is just, again, we have, and soon we'll have a complete link tree. We're starting up a Twitter. Again, the comic releases in March, so we have a good enough time for this, but we're releasing a Twitter next week. And then we're starting up a Facebook account 2 weeks from now. We are trying, I mean, we talked to a few people, like a few indie comic creators. And they had it was very mixed reactions on if a website's necessary, super necessary. But right now, we do have updates on upcoming issues, the artwork, all sorts of stuff. And I think it's again, you're going to see some really awesome, like the beginning sketches of what we're doing, some cool little story beats, previews, all that stuff on our Instagram, which is cityofdemons_comic.
Okay.
And I think you're going to see some really, really awesome stuff there.
Is that where you want people to go for now?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll put that in the show description.
Thank you. And we hope, we're still trying to get more advice and put up, try to get a little bit more of a following just to see if a Kickstarter be worth it.
Well, great. I'm glad that we went ahead and did this. It's almost like I was very happy that you wrote out, dude. I've been so gung-ho on like having graphic novelists because I'm really into it. Yeah. And before Dennis, and I don't know how in the world Dennis found me, but he did. But I didn't have a whole lot of access to that market of comic cons and all of that. I love the culture. And so that was a really good way for me to find those people because I want them to listen to what I got. Because like Porch right. Talk really focuses on like music and pop culture, but graphic novels is a huge part of pop culture. So I do want to have you back on, Parker, down the road when we get closer to the actual release with Blood Moon.
Yeah, definitely.
So that we can rehash and talk about it again. But one thing that I wanted to ask, and this goes back a few minutes ago, is you originally planned it for a screenplay.
Right.
That's interesting. Why is that?
Honestly, that's what I was most familiar with, just at, you know, working film and everything. I just imagine it's kind of like, so the first issue or the first, let's just say 1.5 issues of the story were written as a pilot for like an show. And so I just wrote it and I thought it'd be really interesting. I had some professors back in college that, you know, where I was thinking about reaching out to, you know, help get an agent, try to, you know, sell it. Like I would honestly be at that point, I would have been happy with someone for like $100. I was just like, whatever, but
yeah, sure.
Revisiting the script. Cause I always thought that story was really interesting. The process of adapting it to comic form, I think was a lot more challenging than I think a lot of people would think. Cause I think comics and film.
Well, walk us through that, dude.
Yeah, so I think, again, comics and film are both super visual mediums. But the thing with a comic is that the pace has to be faster. It has to be faster. And the way you can even pace in a page, like I've mentioned, certain story beats in a page, panel to panel, all affect the pacing of a story and the way a scene goes about it. Like, so the timing. And so you have less, like, for instance, in a TV show, you can have a whole scene of characters talking to each other for like, you know, 5 minutes straight, and it can be really captivating. For a comic, you got to go like make that 5 minute scene like 2 pages and go, because like, but it's great. I found it because it's like I'm getting all the information I think the audience needs to know quicker to them.
Yeah, you got to streamline the meat and potatoes.
Exactly. That's a great saying. But it's, you have to make it so much faster and hit your points, boom, boom, boom. And I think what's very fascinating is that you have this one scene, like I mentioned, the 5 minutes, you know, talking scene or, you know, dialogue heavy scene, condensing that down to 2 pages, but also at the same time, how do I make, like, it's okay to have that, like definitely an issue too. You see that, like it's dialogue heavy scenes again and again that establish different characters and players within the story. But what the difference is with comics is, okay, how do I make this visually pace it out panel to panel? How do I have the conversation flow, not just within the writing, but from panel to panel flow in the way I wanted to? And just little things like having a single panel, no dialogue, just a character looking at another character in a specific way. Like just specific little small moments like that, I think are some of the best writing, and there's no dialogue, but some of the best writing you'll find in comics, where just a little panel where it's a character reacting to something, or it takes like a little bit of a pause. And like those moments I think are so special. And it's an effect that I can't quite see in film. I don't think you're particularly going to get in like in traditional novels. It's so visual. It cuts down, like you said, it cuts down all the meat and potatoes. There's an immediacy you have to take advantage of because comics is made to be emotionally immediate.
Yeah. And so like just with issue one, dude, there is a scene to where the two detectives they're riding in the car.
Right.
And they're on their way. It's raining. And back to the very beginning of when we were talking about it, it's like, well, this is our job. We have to do it. And the one detective is looking in the one panel, like kind of like, oh crap, you're right, but I don't want to do this. And then the next scene is crash.
Right.
So like, I mean, great job on that. Like with those panels and those scenes, it's like the pace is just moving, dude.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. It's, that was the thing. So for issue one, it's definitely very proud of the pacing. Issue two, and I was terrified of because it was like issue one is essentially you're establishing the main character and their emotional journey. You're establishing emotional journey, which they're going to go after the rest of the series. Because I thought the main character of that issue is Lucas, and he's the heart and soul of the story. Mm-hmm. And so issue two is you're getting to the main crux. You're establishing the main mystery that's going to be taking place over the rest of the series. And the big players within that. And issue two for me was like, oh gosh, how do I make sure like I pace this conversation of this whole mafia family? How do I make sure this whole conversation, like you get enough, but not too much. Like you get enough information to know, okay, this person is kind of like this. So you're condensing in the dialogue and everything. You're giving enough information about these people to know kind of the gist of what they're like.
Without giving too much away.
Right. And I think what it comes down to is it's almost like a smart way to do exposition. You only give the information that the characters in the moment feel is, you know, really needed. Like you almost want to feel like you're, and why I try to write it as, you want to feel like each dialogue scene, you're eavesdropping it. So they're not going to say something. Like, oh, have you met Derek, the chief of police? Like, the conversations are going to flow in a natural way, like you would be eavesdropping in on people. They're not going to over-explain something, but just by them talking, that's where you have to trust the audience. You can kind of piece together, you know, the status quo or the context of the situation.
Oh, that's something else, dude. And I could not imagine that. And man, I appreciate you sending over like one and two to me. And like, of course, early emails, you told me a little bit about what you had going on, a little bit about the story. You sent the story. Excellent job with that. Like, I would recommend doing that same thing. Like, if you're reaching out to other podcasts,
definitely, yeah.
Because like, there was enough mystery there for me to be like, well, I can't wait to talk to the guy.
Right.
but also like, to that point is like leaving out some of that corniness, right. Or like, oh, have you met so and so? It's
right.
Like setting everything up properly. And like, if I'm understanding this, like you've been writing, you were working on novels on the weekends in high school. This was originally supposed to be a screenplay. So I can tell that you've been thinking and writing for a long time. For a first project being picked up by Blood Moon, dude, shout out to you, man.
Like, thank you. Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you. Yeah. It's I'm interested to hear people's thoughts on, again, the series going forward. I've reached out to several, I'm trying to make it cause I think it's a comic that even if you're not into comics, I think you'll appreciate and you'll really enjoy. So even with some of the marketing, I've just with some friends we've been reaching out to, like ARC reviewers who traditionally review, you know, just novels.
Sure.
And reaching out and getting their thoughts. And their thoughts have been very, very positive. And so for me, it was something that was like tapping into, especially on independent market, try to expand it off. I mean, I would love the independent market, but expand it to people that just like to read, because it's like, I think anyone that just likes to read will enjoy the story. And because it's very grounded, what makes it stand out compared to a lot of independent comics is really just how grounded it is. It's a very grounded, you know, two PIs trying to find a serial killer in 1920s LA. No mystical sci-fi element to it. And which I think makes it
just that demonic Hollywood thing kind of
right. Bring
over it.
Exactly. So it's like the city of demons, again, the name. So I need to finally answer your question about specifically the name. I mean, obviously it's a play on, you know, LA, City of Angels kind of deal, mm-hmm. but City of Demons is that every major player in the story, and you learn more about Lucas and even the other private detective, Lawrence. And you'll even learn a little bit more about him in the third issue specifically. Each one of them is carrying around a certain baggage or personal demon with them.
Oh, I kind of already see it.
And
I just don't know what it is.
Exactly. So, yeah. And so, and even with Lucas, you'll get in a issue five. But the differences with Lucas and Lawrence is that these are guys that are trying to seek redemption in some sort of way. And whether that's selfish or not of them, that's kind of up for the reader to decide. But it's like these two guys who are very, you know, just have a lot of, like, I'm repeating myself, but a lot of emotional baggage are kind of set off against and trying to find a way to really understand an entire like power system that is beyond, like, it kind of will overwhelm them with beyond how evil and cruel it can be. Mm-hmm. And it's this whole idea that it's like that whole city and the whole, you know, all the power players in it are just so innately corrupt, and that the story again starts out as a, you know, pretty simple murder mystery, and then we'll dive into to be much more evil, much more corrupt aspects of LA that were present then and are, you know, have been shown to be present now.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's the whole idea of demons is because what they're dealing with is from their perspective,
own personal demons,
own personal demons, and also the demons of, I would argue, much bigger demons of a city that they can't fully understand. And I think them trying, you know, and even the man that hired them, one of the newly arrived mob boss whose father was killed, you're going to see his story progress, because even for him, he's going to be discovering things that are even for him and even for his family's legacy that he'll have to come to grips with. And so, yeah, again, I'm excited for people to read it. I think
they can get a little taste at the Instagram, right?
At the Instagram. Exactly. So yeah. City of Demons comic. Oh, sorry. City of Demons _ comic. But yeah, I think, and hopefully you agree, I think issue one and two, I think I'm really happy with how they set up the large mystery and set up each of the big players going forward. And again, I think issue three is going to hopefully impress you even more. And issue four will be the best. And issue five will be the best after that. And hopefully issue 12 will be the best thing ever. Exactly.
Yeah, dude, I couldn't imagine, you know, I'm a songwriter. And so, like, I'm always dealing with the economy of words.
Yeah.
And so, like, I look to Jason Isbell or, you know, Tyler Childer or Sturgill Simpson or just people from the past, whatever else.
Yeah.
To see how they would phrase things to be as impactful as possible with the fewest amount of words.
Right.
And writing a graphic novel and panel by panel, you may not even have dialogue, but expressing the human emotion or even just the griminess of the scene. Man, I'm really excited for you. City of Demons, man. I'm here for it. I've got three more questions, and let's walk it out of the door, and I'll see you again in March, and I got to have you back on.
Definitely.
Question one is, what advice would you give to listeners as far as improving their creative process with writing, even if it is with screenplay or just in crafting a story?
Honestly, with in terms of just crafting their story, study stories you love, study why they work, even study the bad ones of why they don't work.
I think that's better. Is like yeah. look at the bad.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's great. You know, oddly enough, for me, looking back on it, when I was first becoming like a film nerd, like a true film nerd, like early, you know, late middle school, early high school, when I was first getting into it, some of the best ways I learned about, you know, storytelling was, you know, first looking at bad storytelling. And the way to do that, at least for me at that time, was I watched a bunch of like YouTube movie critics, and they would talk about, you know, in detail why a certain movie story was bad and what, you know, what didn't work, what aspect was maybe misguided. And I learned so much because it forced me, just watching all this, forced me to sort of grow in the way I evaluate storytelling, to be more critical and be more like, again, look at the details and like, don't just be like, oh, the movie was bad, but like specifically, why did it work? And I think even the trickier part, okay, well, look at what the creator was trying to do, because that can give you insight. Okay, this is what they were trying to do, but why didn't it work exactly that way? It's one thing to go, it didn't work, but I think looking at the context as a whole and trying to understand that is great. Specifically with writing, this is terrible advice, but I procrastinate on deadlines, and so it's great because as a writer, you're not allowed writer's block.
You strike me as a guy who has got something to do at midnight, and he's drinking coffee at 10:15, trying to get it done.
Oh, but no, I love that though, because it's great, because what it is that you're not allowed writer's block. That's just not an option. Like, it's like writer's block is just not an option. So you have to go, and you are just running on instincts. And I just want to say, when I talk about Ryan procrastinating, that means gain something, the first draft done. That does not mean that's like the end product. That's only good for the first draft. You better not, don't do that. Be like, oh, it's done. Cause you'll look back at the next morning and be like, this is the worst thing I've ever written. Yeah. But for first drafts, I love just, you guys just kick it out there, because most of the times it's going to be crap. And like the way it was for Sea of Demons, even the screenplay, it's, you know, the first two issues are based on. The screenplay had a ton of issues, like narratively. I look back at it and I'm like, nah, this is a little iffy. This is a little iffy. But going back at it and then adapting it allowed for me to really run it through another set of drafts, another set of like, okay, we're refining this, making this a little bit more clear. The number one thing with writing, I tell people, whenever you write something, have someone look at it and don't ask them. Don't ask them if they like it or not. Ask them, did you understand what happened? Because the first thing is you want people to understand what you've written. Like I'll constantly, like I, like when I've, when the first comic was fully made and everything, and the first two issues were made, which essentially are just act one of the larger story, I handed that story and sent it to a ton of my my friends who were also really creative, and also to the even like I still keep in contact with some of my old college professors. I sent that to them, and my first question is always, did you understand what happened, and was it clearly communicated?
Okay.
Because I do not want people to be second guessing or confused at any point.
That's going to immediately turn you off. It's like, I don't understand. What the hell? What's going on?
And like, there's a difference between, I think a lot of young writers, they get confused between the difference of that versus like there's one thing to be like, well, I don't understand. Like, well, this was really surprising. Like, to be honest, in the first issue of the car crash scene, you're going to find out what led to that.
Didn't make sense, but like as I got into the second issue and I kind of saw the development, I was like, this is gonna come back. It was probably staged, you know.
Right. Well,
it was probably supposed to happen to them.
Right. There's a difference between setting up questions for your audience. Like that was like why this car just, you know, go through here, and that question is directly addressed in issue 2, not answered, but it's addressed in issue 2. It will be answered later. There's a difference between setting up questions that keep people guessing versus I don't know what this scene's about. Like that's completely different. And I think a lot of young writers make that mistake. Another weird thing I've noticed, a lot of young writers, I think it's attempt to sound serious, get way too grim and gory, and they start cursing a lot for no reason in their stories. I think it's an attempt to sound mature or edgy, because it's like, for instance, City of Demons, I didn't do it because it's just not relevant to the time period. That's just not how they would have talked at all.
Sure.
Also, I think it comes across for young writer as just try hard. And it feels like you're trying to get a reaction more than tell a story. Like City of Demons, and I mean, I hope you would agree. I mean, it has dark moments, but more than anything, call it dramatic more so than dark. Because I think the dark moments are there to really propel the drama and propel the character moments. It's not there to be like, oh my gosh, is that crazy, guys? Like you've seen, I think, a lot of young writers put out. And yeah.
So
hopefully someone takes advantage of that advice.
I don't. I think it's good. Question two is, you mentioned the critics. Right. This is one thing that I've been thinking about lately. Is I pondered with when I was growing up, I would go buy a CD. I would go right. to an FYE or a local music store and a Target or Walmart and physically buy a copy of music. And then I got crapped on a few times because like it would only have like two or three songs on it that was worth a crap, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I'm about to play disc golf with this and try to hit a road sign with it. And so, but in this modern era with Spotify, when it comes to music, is I don't really care so much about what a critic thinks anymore. And if I read a critical analysis from, say, Pitchfork or whomever is right. Rolling Stone, whomever is being critical of the artists that I'm considering looking into their new work, reading what they say is almost what I love the most about it.
Right. No, I, to be honest with you, there's been many comics and even just books I've read because of a negative review.
Yeah, I had to see it for myself.
Right. You know? And you talk about music, and that's 100% true. Like for instance, I did not even know of, was it Noah Kahan?
Oh, and he's a man.
Yeah. And then I heard, I saw some, what's it, Anthony Fantano? Is that his name? And Anthony Fantano did a review, and it just happened to, I don't agree with him on most of what he says, but he did a review, and it was very like, I think it was fine. It was like a fine review. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was like a 6 out of 10. And I listened to it. I'm like, but everything he's complained about, I'm like, I think I'd actually really like that. Like, he's like, oh, the sound. I'm like, yeah. I think I like that. And so I looked up his music, like, oh, this is amazing. This is awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, with critics, I think they're gaining, I think it annoys them because look, whenever you enjoy art, you have to be very discerning on what critics you're going to listen to. And it's not just critics you agree with all the time. It's critics that you think have like for instance, it's kind of like a friend I have where we may disagree on movies or, you know, books or different media, but I fully understand why he thinks the way he does. And with a lot of critics, and it's interesting to bring up music because it's 100% true. They're terrible at reviewing music. They're absolutely, there's terrible critics. They reduce it down to, I hate the star system, but they reduce it down to that. And then the reviews don't even go hardly in depth about the actual lyrics or the actual music itself. It's weird, but you see the same deal with comics where it feels a lot of the reviews feel very shallow. And even if, like, I'm sure there'll be a review I'll find where I don't agree with what they say. Like with anything. But I only ask that's not shallow, that they actually like talk in depth about what worked, what didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm fine with that. But if it's something shallow, like I can't even think of what one would be, but that's something to where.
Too dark.
Yeah. Too dark would just annoy me. And, but that's, I mean, so there's those are some of the kind of comments you're going to get. And like when the, like, for instance, what it was there. I saw a review, and I think I forget what publication it was, but they did, the most influential comic for me growing up was Dark Knight Returns, because just it was the first like kind of serious comic I ever read and just had such a big impression on me and still does. But I remember I read a review where someone like re-reviewed it after like 30 years. And it was essentially like just dark. It was too dark. And I'm like, that's not an opinion. That's just not
Yeah,
like, yeah, it's dark. I think if you ask Frank Miller, he would say the exact same thing.
it's kind of called the Dark Knight there, buddy. Good detective
Right.
work.
And it's, but that's the thing where it's like you ask someone and it annoys me because this happened even when I would, studied film, was we watched, a professor showed us the movie. Have you seen the movie Children of Men?
I don't think so.
Oh, dang. But it's a really great movie about like the earth is infertile, and or infertile or whatever it is. And so, and but then this one woman, has the first, is the first naturally pregnant woman in forever. And so they have to, and then this Clive Owen has to like, sort of rescue her and transfer her to like these group of scientists that may or may not exist. And it's a really intense movie, really great. Our film professor shows that to us. Was so disappointed because half the people in the class were like, "Well, what'd you think?" It was really dark and really just like intense. That's not a review. That's not a review. Like, but there's so many critics who are like that, and
True.
it baffles me because I'm like, that's how they approach it in that very surface level way. I think it also messes with critics a lot nowadays with social media, that their voice is one of a million.
Oh
Before,
yeah.
yeah. So like
And
who cares about the review? Who cares?
they'll even get trashed for their review. Their
Right.
review will get reviewed. Last question,
Yeah.
walking out of the door. Parker Newman, dude. So happy that you came on the program. What was your favorite part of this interview?
Oh, dude, the favorite part of the interview? Honestly, dude, I think it was like, I think just talking about where I came from, because that was a part where it's like, I don't know. I don't think I guess I expected it. And it's like kind of, it put back in perspective. It's like, oh yeah, how'd I end up here? But yeah, no, it was cool, dude. But yeah. Yeah, thank you for having me on. This has been great.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.